When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. We have reached the mathematical midpoint of the season. Not to be confused with false midpoints, mythical midpoints, all-star break midpoints. Not a midpoint, the all-star break. I just did the math. 70% of the NBA season will be over by the time players head to Salt Lake City next month for the all-star break. So we're at the actual midpoint, which seemed like a good time to bring my friend Zach Lowe on the pod to discuss all we've seen in the first half of the season, what surprised us, what we were wrong about, what we were expecting, and what the heck is going on with all the individual scoring binges, not just Donovan Mitchell's 71-point explosion, but all the 50s, the 40s, something going on. We have theories. This is the second piece, part of A Home and Home with Zach. So if you missed it, you can hear us on his podcast, The Low Post, earlier this week. So go check that out if you haven't already. Before we get to the back end of the back-to-back, quick reminder, please rate, review, subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. If you got feedback for me, please hit me on Twitter at Howard Beck. Okay, my conversation with Zach Lowe is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, pleased to be joined for the first time on this podcast. Big welcome to Zach Lowe. Zach, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I can't keep track of your like revolving podcast career. You're like the Ish Smith of podcasts, just jumping around from podcasts. So I can't keep track of the titles. I haven't appeared on this one. I've appeared on every other one. I don't know what the hell's going on.
I think this is literally the second one that I've had a hosting or co-hosting role on. It just feels like a lot more. I am still drinking from my full 48 mug here, as you can see, my full 48 coffee mug. Here's the thing. I did my bad Zach Lowe impression to introduce you, as I've done before on previous podcasts, where I try to do the welcome to and the pause. And then two things hit me. One is, am I infringing on a trademark? Because the first thing that everybody asks me all the time, because they always ask about you. They just want to know about Zach Lowe. But I get hit with the what up Beck every time. And then they say, can I do that? Is that allowed? Is there a charge? Is there a fee? Do I owe royalties to Zach Lowe? I can't remember if we've cleared this up before. Can you clear that up for anybody who wants to invoke the phrase?
Open source, baby. It's all for everybody. It's all for the people. I don't want any red tape. I want innovation, creative ideas, steal it all. That's fine with me.
You've always been a man of the people. And then how cringy is it when I try to replicate the dramatic Zach Lowe pause when I welcome you to my podcast.
Which was an accidental thing that happened on like my first couple episodes, maybe my first one all those years ago when David Jacoby, God bless him, forced me to have a podcast against my will. I think you do all right. It's like, look, I mean, not everybody can do these things, you know? Some people are just born with stupid random talents and other things.
Well, explain, why was it an accident? Did he say you need some sort of actual opening line and this was just the thing that happened? Or
no, I think I didn't know what the opening line should be, and I probably said welcome, and then there was some awkwardness where I was like, what do I do now? How do I continue a podcast? And then it just became a thing.
You have made an awkward pause an actual wonderful gimmick. That's phenomenal. I was a little worried the other day because when you did it, we are completing the Home and Home of our podcast this week. But people should go check out the Low Post if you haven't already from a few days ago. It sounded like you strained a little bit, and I sometimes do wonder in listening to the pod if you've ever actually like strained a vocal cord, because sometimes you're really going all in on the emphasis on the welcome to. It sounds like it strains.
No, but I have injured myself in other mundane ways, the most recent of which was a few months ago when I got my second booster. I'm now, because my wife told me to do this, and she's right, I'm now an expert helicopter, you know, with the shot arm. You got a helicopter so that you minimize the soreness. And I was helicoptering so aggressively that I pulled something in my midsection area from the helicoptering, and I was like, this is just a sad state of affairs.
Wow. Welcome to middle age, my friend. This is what happens.
It's only going to get worse, I've been told.
Sadly, it does. Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, man, I feel like I pulled a rib. What did I do yesterday that could have possibly pulled? I have no idea. It's just middle age. It sucks. Since we last podcasted mere days ago, we had noted the Nets 12-game winning streak. You had noted that Ben Simmons had not made a free throw since November 25th. And lo and behold, the Nets winning streak is over since we last potted. And Ben Simmons made a free throw that night. Causation? Correlation? I don't know. Maybe Ben Simmons not shooting free throws or making them was a good thing.
Yeah, the Bulls continue to just have the strangest season where they beat all the good teams and lose to all the bad teams. And they had a really nice win over Brooklyn last night at home. Got a career game from Pat Williams. Ayo Dosunmu played really well. And Ben Simmons was 1 of 4 at the foul line. 1 of 4. So that's 25%. I guess the 4 is good. The 1 is bad. That's the first one since November 25th, and it is now January 5th. So that has been the only red flag to me about the Nets' complete dominance of the NBA over the last month. And I said to you the other day, like, that the Nets team of the last month, like, this is a championship contender. Like, we can sit here and say that we don't trust it and wait for the anvil to drop from the sky, because it's always something with them. But like, this isn't just, oh, look, they've stabilized, that's cute. This is like, oh. And the only red flag has been, we've seen it in the playoffs with Simmons. I'm having Kevin Herter on my podcast later today, and I rewatched parts of that game 7 between the Hawks and the Sixers, because that was the pass game, but it was also the Kevin Herter game. I was like, I want to kind of rewatch some of Herter's shots, and I want to see where he was when Simmons passed to Matisse Thybulle. Like, did he see it? What was his reaction? And so we've seen it in the playoffs before, and you know it's going to happen. There's going to be hack of Simmons. There's going to be Simmons catches the ball under the rim, Simmons in transition. Like, maybe it doesn't matter because KD and Kyrie are so good, but like, against the very, very best teams, it's going to matter.
Yeah. No question. I wanted to, like, so I sent you a list of topics, ideas for us to discuss today, as we do for these things. I did not send you this one because I figured, I know the one thing you hate talking about the most is yourself, but I wanted to do one quick little aside here before we jump in, having reread your last 10 things column, and we're recording this on a Thursday, so your next 10 things will be out by the time this pops. People are very curious about your process, and I know a little bit about it, and you and I have discussed it at times over the years, but I may have hit this on one of my last 17 podcasts that you believe I had, even though I only had, I believe, one, the full 48.
Is that actually true?
I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this correctly. Yes, my podcasting career not that long, not as long and glorious as yours. You give the impression, and I think this is a very positive impression. You get the impression reading your stuff, reading your tweets, reading your stories that and I can see your pod studio there. I do not see any screens behind you, but I get the impression that somewhere else in that room there are actually like 20 TV screens. All of them split into quadrants so that you can watch every basketball game that's happening at all times. That not being the case, what is the typical week? How many hours? How many games? How often are you watching the next morning? I know you do. You'll tweet sometimes, rewatching Wizards Pacers for some reason. And just notice this, like how much are you putting in the course of an average day, an average week?
I don't do those tweets anymore because I've disengaged from Twitter to the point that it's strictly a reading and link tool for me. I don't know how many hours a week I work because it just feels like with some exceptions where I put my phone away and play with my daughter, it just feels like it's sort of an ongoing, constant thing. In terms of game watching, I think I've said to you before, my religion, such as I have one, is 2 games a day. Start to garbage time, 2 games a day. I rarely miss that. Even if I have like a night event that vaporizes my whole night, a work event, I will try to make up for it, at least watch a game and a half the next morning. Sometimes I get to 3, sometimes I get to 2.5, but I do not. I have 1 TV in my office, and I am just not one of those people who can do the multiple games. I don't know if it's because I'm not, my brain doesn't work that way. I need to focus on one thing. And it's actually, I'm like that way across all life skills. Like I will literally be chopping an onion and my wife will say, hey, what about like planning a trip or like some sort of like who's picking up our daughter from this and whatever. And I'll be like, honey, I can't have this conversation with you because I'm chopping an onion. It should be like, you literally can't have a conversation because you're doing, and like, I can't multitask. I just can't do it. I'm incapable of doing it. It's infuriating for her, but I watch one game at a time. I don't tweet during the game. I'll text during games because people will text me, but I just watch one game at a time. That's it. That's all I can digest. And like, that's why it's all very boring. People ask me about my process and I'm like, it's really kind of just boring. Like I just work, I focus and work as hard as I can.
But you're definitely trying to get, it would seem to me, in part because you're doing the 10 things column, which requires you to have, and also just your job in general, you have to have a feel for all 30 teams at all times. I cannot do it to the extent that you do. It's something I greatly admire and envy. I'm also kind of ADHD. And so when I'm watching a game, especially if it gets a little bit draggy and I look at the app and I see that there's another game that's close and it's in the fourth quarter, I'm constantly doing the click around watching the last 5 minutes of a bunch of close games. I'm terrible that way. And so I also get sucked into the trap of, well, oh, wait, the Warriors are on again. I want to see what's going on with them or what the Celtics are doing or what Luka's doing or what Jokic is doing. And so I'm some teams just fall off the map. So that's the other thing. It seems like you make it a point to, over the course of any 7-day span, if it's only 2 games a night, you're definitely hitting a lot of them. I also know this because we've sat next to each other, particularly at Barclays Center for Nets games occasionally. There's the game on the court, and then there's the game that's on your laptop often. Two things I know about Zach Lowe during games. One, there will be another game on the laptop while there's a game on the court. Two, do not bother Zach Lowe in the course of a game. Zach is concentrating just as he is when he's chopping onions, apparently.
Well, does that count as multitasking? Because if I'm at a game, the thing about being at a game, it's super exciting. It's wonderful to see it live, but there's 3-minute commercial break, 15-minute halftime, this stupid official review for no reason on whether this should be a take foul or not that takes 6 minutes. You add all that up, all that dead time, I can get another game and knock it out while I'm at the game. And then on my car ride home, if I'm taking an Uber or a cab or something, I can sit in the back seat, dial up my Wi-Fi and watch like part of a third game. It's a time. My whole life is just really actually sad. It's just about time management. That's the governing thing going through my brain at all times is time management. So that's why I watch a game during the games. And that's why when people say hello to me, I'm just like, hello. And then I put the headphones are the ultimate weapon for solitude. Just put the headphones on, wave, and continue watching Wizards magic. And I do watch every team. I've seen the last 2 Thunder games because it's like, I think it's important, A, that fans in those markets feel like their team matters because their team does matter. There's only 30. And B, if you don't watch those teams, you can sit here and laugh at them and, oh, that team's tanking and that team stinks. Like, they all have players who are going to matter, and you're going to miss stuff. You're going to be late on stuff that's happening with those players and with those teams if you're just checking box scores. Like, you're just not going to see it. And there's always something, like, even the other day, Shea didn't play for the Thunder.
Yeah.
And I had the Thunder on my little thing. I was like, I got to watch Thunder tonight, Thunder Celtics. And you're initially like, well, God, this game doesn't really matter anymore without Shea. And then you're like, well,
this is an opportunity for other guys. Like, let's see how these, let's see how Jalen Williams 1 looks. Let's see how Jalen Williams 2 looks. Let's see what Giddey does. See what Trey Mann does. And lo and behold, they hang 150 on the Celtics without SGA. And you're like, well, that was kind of a fun game.
You should not have, there should be a rule against two Jalen Williamses on the same team. This is like when we had, didn't we have like 17 Sean Williamses at one point in the league and they were all in the Nets?
Well, what really is the problem, and the Jamichael Green, Jeff Green era in Denver highlighted this, is the box scores will go to great lengths to differentiate one from the other. Like, it'll be J.A. Green and J.E. Green. But then you go to the lineup data on NBA.com, and it's just Jay Green and Jay Green. I'm like, well, this is like, what are you, how are you, like, it's 2023. The stupid NBA updates its app every year. It gets worse every time they update it. They're constantly tinkering with it. You can't figure out the freaking lineup data so I can tell which Jalen Williams is which in the lineup data. This is the kind of thing, other people have real complaints in life, like things that are actually, like, my priorities are so askew that this actually makes me angry.
These are beyond first world problems. These are like first world problems. Well, I get,
no, it's just that I'm stupid because, like, the actual problems of the world are so intractable and intimidating and huge that sometimes I just, like, I can't even contemplate global warming right now. So let me just direct my ire at Jay Green.
Why not? That and the fact that League Pass Digital is still a disaster. I was watching one of the Warriors games earlier in the week. I think it was the first overtime game, the Atlanta one. And twice, because I had surrendered the TV in the main room here. We only have one. I was watching on my computer instead, which meant I was on League Pass Digital. And it went to one of those breaks where there's just a blank screen. And it twice came back after a huge shot had been made in overtime.
Well, you know what, Howard? Digital. What I'm learning about this is that I also watch games on my laptop. I like to watch games on my laptop at games. I have no other choice but to watch other games on my laptop. And the world is meant for phones now. The world is meant for people who want to watch games on their phones. I bet that app works way better on your phone than it does on your laptop. It's not meant for, we're dinosaurs. It's not meant for us. It's meant for people who watch them on phones.
It's too small. It's too small. Also, I have a smaller than average iPhone because I'm one of those people who never gave up on the idea of the size of the iPhone 4. So every new generation of iPhone, I'm buying the one where it's like the SE or the whatever, the iPhone Classic, whatever it is, that still is the size of like the iPhone 4 or 5. That's my. I can't.
Can we talk about basketball? Because we're starting to sound like the two old guys on the Muppets. Statler and Waldorf. Are they Statler and Waldorf who hate everything? I don't want to be Waldorf or Statler.
I became those guys a long time ago. It's a lost cause.
Although
for me.
They were the best part of the Muppets was when start heckling everyone. That was the Muppet Show. Can we get the Muppet Show back?
They brought it back a few years ago, and it only lasted like a half season or something.
Oh, I failed. Here I am calling for the Muppet Show to come back, and it came back, and I didn't watch it.
There was like a one season revival. And I don't think I watched it because I think my daughter had probably aged out of it. We should have watched it anyway. Yeah, I bought her those DVDs when she was small to watch all the ones that we grew up on.
Do you have a favorite Muppet?
A favorite Muppet?
Other than Statler and Waldorf?
Other than Statler and Waldorf. Everybody loves Kermit, right? Like, that's the go-to.
Kermit is like the Hulk Hogan of Muppets. Like, it's like, okay,
yeah,
Kermit's cool. Like, yeah. That's fine. Kermit's fine.
Yeah, I think as a kid, I really thought Fozzie Bear was hilarious. I think that was preparing me for a life of dad jokes, probably. Like, the dad jokes were like, that was just waiting for me. Like, that was my wheelhouse before it was ever time to. So Fozzie, yeah. You?
Swedish Chef. Oh, and yeah. And you just, maybe, you can't go wrong with Animal. Animal's
awesome.
Just making noise on the drums and being crazy.
Somebody did I saw this video recently where somebody took, it was one of those videos, Swedish Chef, I think, is in it, Animal's in it, and one other Muppet. I think they're supposed to be singing, like, Oh Donnie Boy or one of these, like, sad dirges, and somebody overlaid the Beastie Boys Sabotage, and it's the greatest thing I've seen.
That is, I will seek that out.
You should find that.
Okay, all right.
All right, basketball. I feel like we are the only ones this week who have not yet weighed in on what the heck is happening with all these individual offensive explosions, highlighted, of course, by Donovan Mitchell 71, which you and I did discuss briefly on your pod. Before I get to theories, I want to just hit this. To the extent that there is a surge in individual outstanding, eye-popping, box score-breaking performances, good thing, bad thing, just a thing?
I think it's just a thing. I think it's just a thing. I don't think it's good. I certainly don't think it's bad. Like, I'm not sitting here like, oh, the death of team basketball, all these guys that are using possessions at a record rate. I just don't like it. It seems to be working for all those teams. I mean, it's like, I don't know that there's, I don't think it's bad for their teams. And I don't think it's indicative of like those guys are playing selfishly or anything like that. So I think it's more good thing than bad thing.
Yeah, and I didn't even think of it in terms of like selfishness or team play and all that. I thought of it more of as like sometimes in this era, because of the pace of the game, which may be part of this, and because of the, you know, 3-point shooting and spacing and all these features of the modern game, we get this hand-wringing about a distortion of like the space-time continuum and context and whether how to compare eras and whether this is somehow now, you know, like, oh, you know, now it. Every era has its stuff that makes it unique and that makes statistical comparisons impossible anyway, which is why I hate historical comparisons. So I was thinking of it more in those terms, like, is this just a big distortion that we're seeing? So real quick, I just did the quick stat head basketball reference rundown before we came on. At the time of this recording, there have been 14 games of at least 50 points by one individual, and we're about the midseason point right now. Last year, there was 19 total, so we're already at 14. There may not be five more for the rest of the season, for all we know. So you could say, well, we're on pace for 28, which would blow last season out of the water, but like we may not see another one. That's how these things sometimes go. There have been two games of 60-plus. Last season, there were two. There have been 89 games of 40-plus. Last season, there were 119. So again, on pace for, if it continued, to blow that out of the water.
The 40 one is the one that stands out to me.
Yeah.
40 used to be like an event.
Yeah.
And now it's just it's like, oh, it's a good game. 42 and 14 for Embiid. It's nice. Let's see how many points Tyrese Maxey had. Like you don't even linger on the 4 anymore.
We're numb to it. And again, that's why I kind of not that seriously asked, but the good thing versus bad thing. It the baselines have changed quite a bit. In this era and at a time like this, where 40 used to be an event, and now 40 is kind of like, eh.
But baselines have changed. I do think you have to factor it in. I catch myself just looking at stats and stuff and be like, oh, so-and-so is averaging like 21 a game. That's pretty freaking impressive. And then like 21 a game now is like 18 a game in my brain. From like, it's just the you have to just dial back your expectations a little bit for what that actually means relative to the league.
Yeah, there was a time when 20 was the barometer. Like anybody who was averaging 20 plus, or especially over 25, this is a guy you're building around. And now it's fairly almost routine, and there's a ton of them. So to the theories, if we believe that there actually is a spike, and again, we have half a season where maybe there won't be another 50 point or 60 point game, and maybe even the rate of 40 point games will slow down. I don't think it will, but. Is there any one thing that is striking to you about why we're seeing this? And maybe we're just overreacting because there were just a flurry of them over about a 10-day span. And again, because one of them happened to cross the 70 mark, which we see very, very rarely. Theories?
It's sort of a boring answer because I don't have a great answer to it. I just think it's sort of an acceleration of all the trends that have been ongoing for the last 10 years. More threes, faster pace, smaller lineups, or more shooting in your lineup so that the floor is really well spaced for the best player on the team to just get into the paint over and over again. The take foul elimination, which congratulations to the NBA for being 10 years late on that, but they got rid of it, and that has increased fast breaks, and efficiency is obviously sky high on fast breaks. I think all those things just sort of coalesce into a boom in scoring and then a boom in individual scoring. I will say there's been a lot of talk about, you know, heliocentrism. I think Seth Partnow was the one who really introduced that term into the lexicon, the very smart and wonderful Seth Partnow. And that discussion is mostly focused on like Rockets, James Harden, current Luka Doncic, Trae Young, the guy, the idea being this guy runs every single possession. If you combine their scoring and assist rate, their for some sort of combined super usage stat, they are running everything. And Corey, I don't know if it's Yez or Jez. Apologies if I'm getting his name wrong. He does analytics for the Blazers, and he pops into every Blazers broadcast with all these delightful tidbits.
Oh, yes, I've seen him.
He's great. And he had, on last night's Blazers Wolves game, he popped on and he said, he was talking about this, and he said, if you look at the highest usage guy on every team across the league, what their usage rate is, it's higher now. I don't think he gave exact figures, but it's higher now on average than it has ever been, ever in the whole league. So it's not just Luka, Trey, all these guys that we associate it with, even the guys we don't think of as like, wow, they're just pounding it, dominating every possession, Tatum, Giannis, Durant, even those guys, it's 2 or 3 percentage points higher than it's been in the past. Why is that happening? What is the thought behind that? Why are teams more likely to sort of, I guess, simplify and just say, well, that guy's our offense more than not? What does that mean? What does that say? I don't know the answer to that, but I thought that was interesting. I mean, certainly it matches the eye test and everything that we're talking about, but it's interesting.
So I'm gonna now pat myself on the back for being intuitive about something that I did not know because I had not done the homework on. But your guy Corey from the Blazers had a list of things I had jotted down on my Word doc here, and one of them was individual usage higher than ever. That was intuitive, not quantitative. I did not know for sure. But I feel like that's a big part of this.
There's no question that it is.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time when... there was a story I wrote a few years ago about Harden and his postseason, you know, failures, struggles, whatever we want to call them. And I had posited the idea that high usage guys, there's a limit to how far you can go with this. And at the time, I did just a very rough, very... statisticians would cringe at my methodology, but I basically just looked at everybody who had ever had, I think, a 35 usage or over in the regular season, according to Basketball Reference, and theirs are estimates not as precise as NBA.com, but it goes back farther and it's easier to search NBA.com. One of these days, learn some lessons from Basketball Reference, I hope. And the fact was, like, I looked back and, like, even Michael Jordan in his best seasons did not hit 35 usage rate, I think, maybe once or something. And the higher usage rates in an individual season tended to correlate with not going that far in the playoffs. And so I was doing this kind of very rough thing of like, this is not a formula that works. And I had a spirited debate with Daryl Morey about this, because this was back when Harden...
No, Daryl defended James Harden? No way.
Well, but it's more than that. It's more than that. We've been having an ongoing debate for years now about... I kind of believe in this basketball ideal of players sharing the ball and everything. This is the influence of two things. I covered Phil Jackson for 5 years, where it was all about the triangle. And yes, eventually it's all about Shaq or all about Kobe or all about Jordan. But for most of the game, the idea is that everybody is involved. It's a 5-man game. And then guys are feeling involved and in better rhythm and feeling better. So it's just this idea that it's... You want a certain spirit and a connection between your players, and it's not just about one guy above the rest, even though you need that one guy to win championships. And then I covered Mike D'Antoni teams in New York, and he had just come from Phoenix, where it was all about the ball finds energy. And so these two things have always influenced kind of my belief of basketball aesthetics and what works. So I've always been a bit of a skeptic of the uber heliocentric James Harden or Westbrook when he was in Oklahoma. Even Giannis now, though they did win a championship just a year and a half ago. I'm a little bit of a skeptic of the leaning too far into this, but I think teams are more tolerant of it or more embracing of it. And we're in an era where, you know, you just brought it up. The stat is there. It's individual usage. So if we're going to lean hard into take your best player, let him do whatever he wants for the most part within reason and have skyrocketing usage rates, it does stand to reason we're going to get more 50, 60, and even a 70-point game.
Yeah, and as to the ceiling of that style, speaking of Phil Jackson, you know, that's one of the many, many reasons why the Warriors-Rockets rivalry of, as brief as it was, but of the, particularly when Durant was with the Warriors and Paul was with the Rockets and it was kind of a fair fight-ish. That's why it was one of the reasons it was so irresistible was the clash in styles,
yeah,
and underlying that, like a really, really deep philosophical disagreement on how basketball should look. And not only like that, also influenced the officiating kerfuffle that happened when the Rockets produced their report about right. how they had been shortchanged X amount of points in Game 7 in 2018. And I dug into that. I dug into that with league officials and team officials and all that. And part of that was like, just the sort of human nature officiating of the Rockets were like slightly right to a very small degree in that Harden didn't get quite as many calls as he likely deserved. But part of that is like they're just he has the ball all the time. And so no superstar gets every call they deserve, because if they did, the games would last 3.5 hours. And that was just exacerbated by how much Harden had the ball. I had this exact conversation with a team official at a game recently, and about like, what do you think of this? Like, can you win? Can you win the way Dallas is playing right now? Yeah. Can you win the way the Rockets played? And he kind of said, well, like the Rockets, when they had Chris Paul as the number two guy, like almost beat the greatest team that's ever been assembled in the history of the NBA, maybe. Look at LeBron's usage rates from his days in Cleveland when they won the championship. They're between 31 and 35, and he had Kyrie Irving as a second guy. Maybe it's not about the style as much as it is about the supporting talent around the style. And I don't think there's like a universal answer to this, but yeah, if it's Luka with Christian Wood as the second best player, you're probably not going to get very far. If it's Luka with a guy close to his level that's willing to play off the ball, you could probably get pretty damn far. I don't know that I do think there's a fatigue thing, where you have to be a little careful with how you parse it out in the regular season. And we've seen it with Luka in fourth quarters. Every time that Harden craps the bed in an elimination game, the answer is always, well, he's tired from all the stuff he did in the regular season. Well, it's like no one made him do that stuff. Like, it's within the rules where he can not play that way all the time if he wants to.
And I guess that we get to a chicken and egg thing too, right? Because in the hypothetical where Luka has a Luka-esque, or at least a guy maybe a notch or two below him as a teammate, another true all-star, the usage rate is probably not as high anyway, because by definition, you're going to probably let that guy carry some of it, and you don't need to be at 35, 36, 38 usage. So there's some chicken and egg stuff going on there, and some other stuff too. But yeah, to the extent that, you know, we don't have rooting interests, there's what stuff we like and stuff we don't. I enjoyed watching those Warrior teams, again, as another example of that ball movement. You know, everybody's involved. It's more, to me, that's just more fun to watch than those Harden Rockets teams.
Well, and they play that way for one reason, and one reason only. You can give me all the reasons you want and talk about Steve coming from the Phil Jackson coaching tree. They play that way because of Steph Curry. Yep. That's it. That's the whole thing. Everything they have done there is because of Steph Curry stylistically in terms of what they accomplished. That's it. I do think Luka, not to sidetrack us here, but you know, I was having this discussion recently with somebody about someone said this on a podcast. I think it was Wendy's podcast. I can't remember which one. About being really confident that Luka would welcome a legitimate co-star, be super happy to share the ball and play more of an off-ball role. And that's a subject of a lot of sort of speculation around the league of like, let's just say they got, I'm not even going to say a name. So just a really good guard who has had usage rates near 30 in his career, but isn't as good as Luka. I bet Luka likes that idea. I wonder how it would work in reality, because it's the same. It like we saw with Harden, like every time they got somebody, he'd be like, oh, it's great, let's get this guy. And then after a year, he'd be like, I don't want to play with this guy. Like, and this guy doesn't want to play with me because I don't pass him the ball because I want to play Harden ball. Like, does Luka want to play Luka ball, or does he want to play? And maybe it doesn't even matter because he's so freaking good at Luka ball that they got to the conference finals last year and they're kind of surging up the standings now.
Yeah. We had a couple leftovers on the low post, some things we kind of touched on, but we didn't really dive into, and I kind of wanted to just circle back to them. We don't have to spend a ton of time, but I just thought it'd be interesting. We had touched on, just briefly, the midseason tournament, because other innovations recently, including lottery reform and the play-in tournament have had a really positive impact on the regular season. Parity, competitiveness, all this stuff, right? Of course, as we sit here at the in early January at the mathematical midpoint, we are still pre-pivoting season time. I don't know what I'm... The time of the season when teams decide to pivot. Tanking can still happen this year. All the parity we're seeing could still get just blown up by teams deciding, you know what, screw it. I know the odds suck. Forget the play-in, forget everything else. Let's just go for Wembanyama. That could still happen. It could change this entire discussion. But a lot of things have gone right. And the thing that is still looming on the horizon is the in-season, the mid-season tournament, which you and I think have both been skeptics on. We have friends at the league office who have are convinced that they're going to convince me. And I remain a skeptic. But you said, I think you said the other day when we talked that you were warming to the idea. You were not as opposed or skeptical as you were before. What's your sense of what this might do and why it might actually spread? Because I think everybody agrees anything to energize the regular season is a good idea. I'm just not sure if this is the right wrinkle.
So you know how every time your favorite website like redesigns itself out of nowhere, your initial reaction is like, I hate this. Go back to the way it used to be. I don't like this interface.
No idea what you're talking about.
And then after like 3 days, you just forget that it happened. You're like, this is actually kind of good. I think that's what the midseason tournament is going to be like. I think there's going to be this initial like, what is this thing? Does anyone care about it? Are we hanging a banner for it? This is stupid. It's a championship, but it's not the actual championship. And then in year three, we're going to be like, oh, the midseason tournament, Final Four is coming up. That's kind of fun. I kind of like that. If you don't want it, if you don't like it, so much of it is going to just be built into the regular season schedule anyway that you don't even really have to notice that it exists. And if you do like it, I think there'll be whatever it's going to end up being, this Final Four or Final Two or whatever they stop and play these extra games when it's just the end of it. It'll be this kind of fun, like, oh, this is kind of a fun, like, whatever, 2 day, 3 day thing, and then it's over. Like, I just think it'll be... I think it's almost like no harm, no foul. Like if you don't like it, you don't really have to care about it. And then it's just over and we go on with the season.
It'll give us one more thing to either discuss, deride, whatever on podcasts when it finally comes to pass. So, you know, we could sit there and mock whatever it's going to be, the David Stern Cup, the Pacers won the Stern Cup. Who cares? Like, it's not the championship.
You know who's going to care, though? You know who it's going to be cool for? Like, I don't know what the final negotiation will be, but there's going to be, like, a non-trivial amount of money for a lot of players. Sure. Like, whatever the prize is going to be, like, maybe it doesn't matter for the max guy on your team, but for, like, the back third of the roster, it's going to be a big deal, potentially.
It won't matter for max players financially, and it won't matter for championship caliber teams competitively because their eyes are still going to be on April, May, June. And that's my concern. But to your point, if the players embrace it and are excited about it and motivated and it makes those games feel somehow more vital, then that will translate to the fans, right? Like we as viewers feed off of whatever the teams are projecting. If they embrace it, I think we end up embracing it.
Now, I'm not sure how I would feel about any... The difficulty of it is, like, I'm not sure how I would feel about any team-based reward that gets attached to it. So, people have in the past floated, you should get an extra draft pick or something like that, which is really, that means the players are playing to give you another crack at getting their replacement.
Yes.
Or maybe teams... Maybe if you win, you should be guaranteed a playoff spot in the real playoffs. Like, that seems like for something that's going to be kind of mostly built into the regular season schedule, which is like random and has back-to-backs and home court advantage and injuries and load management, a lot of managing of the loads. It just seems like that seems like a pretty out of proportion reward. So I don't know. I don't know if there should be any team-based reward other than you get to say you won.
I do think, because I think competitive incentives are better than financial incentives in a lot of ways, I like the idea of it having some influence on the seedings or home court or something. Like, I don't know how you do that. And I know, as you're saying, there's so many other variables, it may feel distorted. But that's something you could actually play for and you would care about. I'm not saying they wouldn't care about a couple extra thousand in their wallets.
Let's game it out, though. So, like, what if the Celtics win it and they're already, like,
a great team.
Obviously, yeah. In the playoffs, they're a great team. Like, does it end up being the first tiebreaker over head-to-head if they tie with sure. the Bucks in the standings?
Sure.
What if, okay, and then on the other hand, what if the Rockets win it? What are we doing with them? Are we putting them in the playoffs? No. Are we putting them in the play-in?
Yeah.
And if we do put them in the play-in, and we know halfway through the season that the 15th place Rockets are actually in the play-in, what does that mean for teams 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13? It just starts to get messy.
Weird. It gets weird in a hurry. It's true. All right. The other leftover loose thread we had, this could be a 3-hour discussion, but we're going to do it in like 5 minutes. I have been very, 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 very much pro Lakers should trade the damn picks. They actually have more picks. I went into this on the crossover pod with Mannix when we talked about this last. They have other picks. It's not just that it's 2027-29. Even this season, it's a swap with the Pelicans. They're going to lose a pick that could become Victor Wembanyama, but they do get the Pelicans pick. There's an option that the Pelicans could take either next year's or the year after, so that's locking up some picks, but they will have other first-round picks. The idea that the Lakers are putting themselves in a position where it's all or nothing, championship contention or nothing, we can't trade these picks, it's going to sacrifice our future. I am of the belief, and I've always have been, and this goes back to when LeBron was in Cleveland, and this goes to the Warriors, when I thought they should have traded the picks that became their young guys. If you've got a special player, you're all in. You should be all in at all times, especially if they're in their twilight, as LeBron is. You have been a pump the brakes guy on any trades of those picks. I believe they should still go all out, whatever it means, because if it makes them more competitive this season, it makes the season more relevant, more vibrant for this season where LeBron is still playing at least an all-NBA level, then you do it. And it also helps you potentially next season because these aren't players that are just going to disappear. But you have been a bit more of a slow go on that one.
Well, first of all, you have to make sure that they are actually not players who are just going to disappear.
True.
You have to make sure there are players that are either have multiple years on their contracts or in the case of someone like Kyle Kuzma, you're willing to pay them 20-something million dollars a year and I know this is hard to hear for the Lakers, the little shop that could, the little engine that could, like maybe go into the luxury tax a little bit more aggressively, like a lot. I'm not sure they have more first-round picks to trade because they owe so many and it's uncertain when New Orleans is going to take that 2024-2025 pick that because of the Stepien rule, I'm not sure they have extra ones to trade.
Let me clarify. Not that they have to trade, but that they have coming eventually. It's not that they will be, if they trade those 27-29 picks, we're acting as though and conversing about these things as though once those are gone, they're screwed. I'm saying they have other pieces and of course some of those picks will become trade eligible in future years. I'm saying they don't have more to trade now, but if those picks are gone, if they're out the window for Hield and Turner or whatever it becomes, it's not as though you don't have future picks to use for yourself in a post-LeBron
for yourself
world.
That's the key for yourself. You shoot yourself in the foot for your ability to ever trade those picks again because of the Stepien rule. But they also have second round picks coming from I think a couple other teams, which is like yay hurrah. My thing has always been two things. Most importantly, what's the trade? Tell me the trade.
Well, that's the tough part. And listen,
the whole thing, Howard. That's
their
whole
job.
Part.
That's their job. That's their job. Okay, and they could have done Hield and Turner over the summer. I think everybody agrees.
So that's done. They didn't do it. Okay, it's January 5th. The Pacers are like 4 games ahead of them in the standings.
Yeah.
Buddy Hield shooting 43% from 3. Miles Turner's really good. So that's gone, probably. Let's just posit that it's gone. Nothing is ever dead until it's dead, and it's February 10th or whenever the day after the trade deadline is. But let's posit that it's gone. What's the trade?
I have not been playing with the trade machine, and I don't know. But that is presumably the front office's job. My job is to say, I think you are screwing this up, because I'm just a media pundit off in the way. I'm Statler and Waldorf up there mocking their inability to actually make this season worthwhile. It's their job to, as on the Muppet Show, perform a little better so that Statler and Waldorf don't have something to mock them for.
Okay, but if there's no trade, there's no trade. And
well, we don't know.
Don't know, but like teams are going to maybe pivot in the next month and maybe different players become available. But so there's that whole problem. Linked to that whole problem, let's just take the Hield and Turner trade, which I before the season I was like, that's, they gotta really seriously consider that. That's kind of a good trade. Let's think about what we have learned, or in some cases relearned, in the interim. Number one, Anthony Davis is a center. They have to build around the entire assumption that Anthony Davis is a center. Miles Turner is a center too. Jakob Poeltl's a center. Go through all the centers. They're all centers. You can sit here and tell me that Miles Turner can shoot threes and maybe guard stretch fours, so to minimize the sort of center overlap. Like, that's not ideal. Number two, Russell Westbrook's playmaking is like a real thing that they need. So if I take that away and I bring back no playmakers, none, zero, Buddy Hield and Miles Turner are like anti-playmakers, I have now have a playmaking deficit on my team that I have to deal with. So that's all that. The second big prong of this is, I keep reading this and hearing this, and it sounds awesome to say, and it's true in some like very basic literal sense. Well, man, if you just have LeBron and AD playing like his MVP self, like he was for those 15 games, and, you know, just a competent, like, maybe trade for a Kuzma here and a Bogdanovich there. Maybe we make two deals. Like, they got a puncher's chance in any series in the Western Conference. Puncher's chance. Like, okay, that's awesome. A puncher's chance? Like, a puncher's chance is great in any individual series. Here's the deal. Number one, you have to get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're not in right now. They're not in the play-in right now. Number two, a puncher's chance to win every series. You got to win three to get to the finals. So that means you got to connect on the punch in a deep conference three times in a row. That's like just basic probability of like, what's the odds of flipping heads three times in a row? It gets worse and worse and worse the more consecutive wins you have to add up. And all of that is based on the assumption that the best case scenario will play out, that LeBron will stay healthy, that Anthony Davis will get healthy, stay healthy, and play like the MVP. You have to plan for contingencies that include LeBron getting hurt, which has happened every year he's played for the Lakers, basically, and Anthony Davis getting hurt, which happens every month he plays for the Lakers, and Anthony Davis maybe not playing all the time like an MVP level guy that he was for 15 games out of, so far, 40. Like, you can't just assume that everything else is going to hit around this trade.
Yeah. And I'm with you on that, and that's all fair. My feeling is simply that the puncher's chance means that you have added meaning to this season, whereas at the moment there probably is none. And I would rather have puncher's chance and feel like, you know what, I did as much as I could to maximize LeBron's late prime, his twilight, whatever this is at age 38, year 20, where he's still playing at an all-NBA level. I want to be able to go to sleep at night, not just now, but in future years, knowing that I did everything I could to give him that puncher's chance. Because, frankly, this is a year where the West, as you say, it's really deep. But there's no super team. There's nobody that's unbeatable. And LeBron and AD at their best.
I reject that conceit. Yes, there's no super team. That's awesome. Like, Durant's not on the Warriors anymore. Like, there's no super team. That doesn't mean it's easier to win the West. It doesn't mean it's easier to win three playoff series in the West. Let's put it that way.
Forget super team. There's no great team. There are a bunch of really, really, really good teams. There's no great team. Fair?
Yes, but that historically has not been a really good sign for a bad team's chances of winning a conference.
We're trying to make them not a bad team. That's the point of the exercise.
Look,
right?
I get it. I was tempted by that Pacers deal before the season. A couple of things have changed since then. A, that deal's maybe off the table. We've certainly posited that just for the thought exercise. And B, the Lakers are worse than I expected them to be, than most people expected them to be. But I do think there is a thread the needle thing here, which is that, as you said, you make a trade that not only bolsters you this season, but gives you a path that makes sense around LeBron and AD for next season. So that's why I'm sure they're watching the Bulls for LaVine. I'm sure they're watching the Wizards for Beal, although that contract is a lot. The Russ contract is a lot, too.
Talk about a guy who's always hurt.
Yeah, and Brad's had a really good season, but he's been hurt a lot. He just got hurt, came back and got hurt again against the Bucks the other night. So I do think they'll look at deals like that. And that makes – you can sell me on something like LeBron, Beal, AD. All right, let's get ready and go to war with that. That's the use of our cap space this summer effectively, right, by trading for Beal. That's interesting to me. And if he stays healthy, the puncher's chance rule certainly comes into play with that group.
So I mentioned we're at the mathematical midpoint, and a couple more before I let you go here, just kind of looking back. We all make our silly preseason predictions and prognostications and rankings and things. And I was looking back at some of mine. I think the one that made me cringe the most was I had Rudy Gobert as my preseason defensive player of the year. Probably not going to happen.
I mean, that race is wide open too.
I still feel okay about Clips over Bucks in the finals, though there's like 17 possible finals iterations at least. And that one, you know, we'll see. Anything that you firmly believed about a team, a race, a player, a situation before the season that at midseason you're going like, I may have been a little off?
I was dramatically wrong about the Toronto Raptors. I thought the Raptors were going to be good. Whatever their over under was, I can't remember what it was. I was like over. They're 16-22. Every possession is a goddamn slog. And they're starting a homestand now that is going to make or break their season. And they started it with an almost miraculous comeback win, but loss to Milwaukee last night in another game where their offense was horrible. Their defense hasn't been as good as I expected it to be. And you're starting to feel the downsides of the kind of style that they've chosen of just all length, all size, all versatility. Well, you know, guards are good. Shooting is good. And they don't have enough of those things. Centers are good. Those downsides have come to roost. So I was that's the one I was by far the most kind of wrong about. Everything else I actually did. I was probably a little too low on Portland, but they're just one game over 500. It's not like they're blowing the doors off people. And I guess, you know, look, for all the opposition I had to the Gobert trade, I still thought the Timberwolves would be a good regular season team.
Yeah.
And to date, they have been a not good regular season team. And I guess that, I mean, Utah's the obvious one we were all wrong about, but those are the ones that stand out.
Yeah. I had on my quick hit list just underestimating Utah, Portland, and Indiana. All those teams have been really fun and competitive and yeah, within reason, like they're not, you know, none of these teams are winning a playoff series, but, those have been fun to see us be wrong about. I thought the Grizzlies would struggle to replicate their success of last season. And that wasn't so much a judgment about them. It was more about the depth of the Western Conference and, you know, guys coming back in Denver and the Clippers and all. Like, I just thought that the situation would make it tougher. That
and Jackson starting the season injured. Yes. And I thought they were their downside was potential. Like, we got to avoid the play in. And they're really, really good, man. The Grizzlies are really good.
They're tied for first in the West as we record this.
I've said this before. That's a team. They hold their assets near and dear. They play for the big fish. If I'm them, if I can trade one little asset, one pick and one young player or something for like a medium-sized fish that can be my fifth to eighth best player, but is a proven veteran with a skill set that helps me, I think that team is good enough to do it now. Like, I think they should go for it now.
I agree. You start off with the Raptors, which I also had on my list of teams that I certainly overestimated. You just spent a bunch of time, as you do every holiday or, you know, December holiday break with family up there. So you were in Toronto and you probably spent some time around the team as well. Do you have something coming on the Raptors that we should be looking for?
No, I had hoped to, but the dates of my trip changed to the point that I, instead of seeing an entire awesome Raptors homestand, I saw one.
Oh, right. Because yes, Raptors family game. Illness issues. Yes.
I think Tim Bontemps has something on the Raptors. I mean, it's, we all know the Raptors are facing a crossroads, right? And I think Tim has a story coming out. He was there for that whole homestand. We got to hang out a little bit. I think he has something coming on the Raptors facing a crossroads, and what does it actually look like for them? Like, it's, you know, the blow it up button is easy to sort of look at and gawk at, but the Raptors are a particularly tricky case of like, okay, so if you just ask one follow-up question, like, well, what does that actually mean? Like, what does blow it up mean for the Toronto Raptors? Like, literally, what do you do? Then it becomes a little harder.
I don't think they're the classic blow it up. Like the Bulls are the classic blow it up team. Like you're just, you've maxed out. The Raptors are more like the kind of pivot along the way thing where trade one key piece or maybe two and some picks, whatever it is. I don't feel like they're a blow it up because I think of blow it up as being like you're tearing down to the studs and tanking. And I don't think that's where they are.
Yeah. And like, so what are they supposed to do? Trade Siakam?
Yeah.
Like what is that doing for me? Like,
no.
Anyway, I'll talk about the Raptors another day as the crossroads approaches.
Do you worry about the backlash from Spooky Mulder fans as you describe them in Toronto?
Oh,
I actually was thinking about this. Is that your most, we all have fan bases that seem to come after us the most when we spend too much time on social media or wherever else. Is that your, are they the bane of your existence? They're the ones who are going to come the most? Is there another fan base out there that haunts you?
No, oh, I love Toronto fans. even the Spooky Mulder contingent is just sort of fun. I don't even know anymore because I don't pay attention. I do know I ran into someone in Toronto who saw me on the street and was like, "Oh, Zach Lowe, hey man, like I said some nasty stuff about you on Twitter. I'm sorry. Like you're a really nice guy. I like your work." I'm like, "Oh, okay, I didn't see it, but thanks." And I think that's just how most people are. It's like, yeah. it's the people who are mean on social media, if they see you in real life, like Kyrie Irving, actually, to his credit, talked about this when the Boston fans were getting on him, was kind of like, when he tried to engage him and was like, here I am. Like, yeah. If you saw me in a coffee shop, you guy calling me profane names would probably come up to me and be like, "Hey, Kyrie, just like love your game. Big fan." Like, people are just different on social media than they are in real life, and so I just learned to stop paying attention to it. And this poor guy was like, he didn't even tell me what he said. God only knows what it was. And he was like, perfectly nice guy.
You're a better man than me for not looking at all those comments all the time. I probably spend too much time reading any of it. Yeah, people. When you say different on social media, what you mean is that people are far worse on social media.
Well, people just call you names, like you're a fucking idiot. You're idiot, yeah. Moron, and like, and then they see you in real life, and they're like, "Oh, there's he's a person."
Yes,
he's a person, and he's like walking with other people.
Also, by the way, I want to say this almost every time, guys. It's just sports. It ain't that serious. By the way, a criticism or negative remark about your team is not a personal attack on you. You are not your team. I hate to tell you this. You are not your team. It has nothing to do with you. All right, last thing. Give me one thing you would change. If you could grab Doc Brown's DeLorean, go back in time, save one team this summer from minor error, catastrophic mistake, just whatever flight of fancy they took that they shouldn't have, is there one thing you would undo on behalf of one team?
Well, there's only one answer to it. There's multiple answers to this question, but there's really only one, right? I mean, there's only one.
Probably one primary one. I have an alternate one, but I'm curious.
There's only one, and this was one I first guessed in talking to people around it at the time. And like, the ultimate test is if Minnesota put Rudy Gobert on the trade market now, what would they get back? And the answer is it would not be close to, deep breath, Jared Vanderbilt, Patrick Beverley, Malik Beasley, 4 first-round picks, the other first-round pick they just drafted, the first-round pick they just drafted before that, swap rights in X years. And they're like, it wouldn't even be close. Wouldn't be close. It would not even, I don't know if it would be a half of that.
I want to note that you did not read that. That just came off the top of your head. That was impressive. The list.
There are other candidates, right? I mean, I'm sure you have alternate candidates, but like.
No, the list of Wolves things that were sent down was impressive. Yeah.
That's the one.
That is the one. Because when I sent you this question, I was thinking like, what's the, because you know me, I'm constantly going for the outside the box thing, and I destroyed all boxes on your podcast the other day. I lit them on fire. I was supportive of the fact that the Knicks decided not to go for Donovan Mitchell at the time for all the rationale that we know, what they were going to have to give up, what they would have left, whether they'd even be good enough with what they had left and all this. And I don't want to, I'm not being a prisoner of the moment in the 71-point game, I swear. There's a part of me that thinks, you know what? You look at where they are, you know, they win 8 in a row, they lose 5 in a row, they're up, they're down. They're exactly what you should expect them to be. I thought they'd be about a 500 team that would flirt with playoff, play-in, whatever, somewhere low in the play-in or playoff field. And that's where they are, and that's probably where they'll be. And it's a renaissance season for Julius Randle. It's been great. Jalen Brunson has proven he was exactly worth the tampering charge and the lost second-round pick and the $100 million contract. All that's fine. I don't know what would have gone out ultimately, because we never know for sure what would goes out ultimately in a deal that did not get done. We all have all these hypotheticals and reports of what could have happened. There's a part of me that thinks, you know what? Maybe they should have. Maybe they should have. You see what Donovan Mitchell's doing on a night-to-night basis. I think he's even better than he was in Utah in a variety of ways. And you need the one star to get to the second star sometimes. And their ceiling with him, maybe they'd still be a first round and out team with what else is there or would be there after a trade. I don't know. There's a part of me that's thinking about that more now, just seeing how great Donovan Mitchell has been in Cleveland. I'm not judging it, and I'm not saying I believe this firmly, but when I was thinking about other ways to go other than Gobert, that was the one I thought about.
Yeah, that's fair. I've certainly thought a lot about that. And when the Knicks were on that 8-game winning streak, I had Ian Begley on, and we talked about, like, no matter what you thought of the Mitchell trade not happening, the Knicks' decision to ultimately not do it to the degree that they had made a coherent decision and weren't blindsided by the Cavaliers actually doing it. I don't think that 8-game win streak either redeemed the Knicks' reticence to do it, or that the following 5-game losing streak proved that the Knicks were idiots for not doing it. I think the jury's still out, and as everyone said at the time, they did not have a ready-made nucleus the same way that the Cavs did when they went all in. They were more ready for the next step. Actually, when I was thinking of alternates to Gobert for this question, I thought of the opposite thing, which is it's not one transaction. It's a prolonged sort of failure to anticipate a transaction. I thought about it from the other side of, like, the Mavs should have figured out the Brunson situation in a way that would have him on their team today. And you can come back to me and say, well, could they have Brunson and Christian Wood? Would that be too expensive for a team that's already over the luxury tax? Yeah, maybe, like, you have to figure out some other things, but I don't think there's any question they'd be better off with Jalen Brunson on their team. And that was a totally attainable goal for them had they done some things differently over the last 18 months.
Yeah, no, that's one where if they could grab Doc Brown's DeLorean and go back, I think they would handle that situation, that contract, much differently. And that's one of my big curiosities for, you know, the next month. We've got, about 5 weeks or something to go till the trade deadline. I don't know what the Mavericks can do. They feel like one of the teams that have to do something. There's the Toronto-Chicago category of the teams that you're wondering if they're going to pivot away from being competitive. The Mavericks are one of those that I just feel like the clock is ticking and they gotta find something. I don't know how much
seven straight wins right now. They might play their way out of feeling any urgency to help their team this year. And try to kick the can again to off season and beyond once they have fulfilled the Knicks Porzingis obligation and they have all their picks to trade. They may be playing their way in back into that kind of holding pattern, but you're always a 4-game losing streak away from feeling the same urgency you felt when you were previously on a 4-game losing streak.
Indeed. Zach, this has been great. Wonderful getting to do this twice with you in 1 week. Folks, if you didn't hear us doing the low post, I don't know what's wrong with you, but go back and find us on the low post.
Yeah, what's wrong with you, people?
Constant question I'm asking people. Go back and listen to that. Check out Zach's 10 things column, which will be up around the same time as this podcast. Zach, great seeing you again, my friend. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Hopefully I'll see you soon at one of the New York City basketball arenas.
Where I will not bother you while you're looking at your laptop.
Yeah, don't bother. If I have my headphones on, Beck, keep your distance.
Take care, my friend. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Zach Lowe. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, at Howard Beck.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from JELD-WEN. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all JELD-WEN windows today. View our entire selection of JELD-WEN windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.